We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Morning. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Next Sunday's Easter. Love an Easter buffet. Easter is one of those rare no-sauce Sundays. Yeah, my wife isn't like 100% into having sauce every Sunday. Like, she likes it most of the time. But every once in a while, she likes a break. So I always remind her, look, we'll take a break on Easter. He's like, yeah, I can have ham on Easter. I take one. Yeah, we got to have some manicotti stuffed shells on the side, but it doesn't have to be, you know, spaghetti and meatballs. Anyway, yeah, so that's next week, though. Today, Sauce Sunday. Baby. I want to tell you about my attempted growth. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I would actually love your feedback on this. I appreciate you guys. Some of you guys are willing to write me and email me weekly with thoughts, especially when I ask for it. So I appreciate that so much. But here's something that happened recently, and then I want to tell you an adjustment I made professionally just this week, and I want to know what you think of this, because I have mixed thoughts myself. And I'll give you both sides. So a few weeks ago, I was invited to speak at RIT in front of a class. Now, I am very lucky and blessed, and I love doing it, but I get the opportunity to speak quite frequently at local colleges, RIT, U of R, MCC. I get to go to Cornell once a year and speak. And then beyond just colleges, I also get the opportunity to speak in front of professional organizations here and there. And this week, I had the opportunity to speak at the Western New York Institution for Food Technologists Conference, which is essentially a food science conference that happens in Rochester every year. It sounds very fancy. Really, what it is it's suppliers, people who are selling ingredients to other manufacturers, folks like me, right? So while I am A, making ingredients to sell, I'm also buying ingredients. So I work both as I am being sold to and I am selling when I do a show like this. But part of it is these seminars, and I got to give a speech at one of the seminars, and they wanted me to speak on entrepreneurship, which is, of course, my absolute favorite topic to talk about, and what about 95 to 99% of my speeches end up being about is entrepreneurship. So back to the RIT thing. So a few weeks ago, I speak at RIT, and it's myself and my friend Lindsay Connolly, who's a recent guest here on the podcast, actually. She's a friend of mine. We serve on a board together. We're in Rotary together, and just a colleague, somebody who I have enjoyed the company of many times. Lindsay spoke after me. So I go to RIT, I speak, and I did what I have always done, which is I basically just go. How long do you need me to talk? And I just start talking. And doing that, there's some good that comes from that. Like, I think that there is an energy, you know, I try to get some laughs. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But in general, I bring a certain unique charismatic energy maybe when I speak, and I'm honored by that, and I feel that too. I'm a pretty self-deprecating person, but I can tell when I'm up talking that I think I'm usually doing an okay job. But I will tell you this. The negative is that sometimes I meander. I get off onto a tangent. I go left. I go right. I get off point, and I don't. So there's been times where I fear I don't do a great job because I think, well, I kind of got off the point there. I told a story that didn't make any sense. There was no real punchline, no lesson. There are lessons I have to talk about, lessons I have learned in my journey that I like to weave into my speeches. And there's times where I get off on a tangent and I end up not talking about this lesson. These people are here to hear me speak. I owe them those lessons. And instead, I told some story from high school, right? Like, that's what I'm talking about. I just kind of get off on a weird little tangent and I get mad at myself and I don't think I'm focused enough. So the day at RIT, that's what I did. And it went fine. It went fine. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It was fine. Right after my speech, Lindsay went, and Lindsay has a PowerPoint, and that's the other thing. I never had a slide deck. I just talked. Well, Lindsay has a deck, and Lindsay goes through her presentation, and she has very specific examples. She does a couple of case studies. She really goes into depth about what her company, Linden Digital, does, and she just overall just does a really great presentation, and it's very focused, and it teaches some lessons, and I thought very highly of it. And so I went home that night, and I told my wife, I said, I think I need to grow up with the way I do presentations. She says, what do you mean? And I said, you know, I don't hate everything about the way I present. I like that I'm off the cuff. I like that I can ad lib. I like that I bring charisma and energy. But I think I need a slide deck. I think I need to start to focus in on some things when I speak, and that I have these few points in my speech that are good little lessons from my journey. I need to make sure they make it in every single time. And the way I'll do that is by having a slide deck, and I'll be able to, that'll keep me on track. I can kind of glance at the slide and then speak to whatever's on there. Sounds great in principle, right? So this week on Wednesday, I speak at this IFT conference, and it was the first time now with a brand new slide deck, thanks to our great intern, Holly, here at Craft Cannery, who assisted on the slide deck. But I have this slide deck, and I'm running through it, and I am still doing some ad-libbing and bringing the energy. But I did notice the deck brought my energy down a touch, because just by nature of having a deck, I felt a little bit more tied to it, like I couldn't go off on tangents. And I don't know if that was good or not. I know it's going to be hard for you to give me your opinion without seeing side-by-side comparisons. But in general, I also got a little off on time, meaning early on in the presentation, I spent more time per slide. So by the end, I was kind of rushing the last few slides. And so I think I'm going to not give up on it. I think that this idea of having a slide deck and a more focused presentation, I'm going to do it at least two more times, because I think you need reps, you need practice, you need to get good at it. But I just was wondering your opinion on what's better, the off-the-cuff kind of meandering thing where you don't know what you're going to get, you might not get what you paid for. Not that anyone's paying to see me speak, but you get what I'm trying to say. As advertised. You may not get what was advertised because you're just going to kind of get what comes out of my mouth. Or this idea of having a slide deck and really making sure that I'm focused on saying, here's what we do, here are some case studies of how it works, and, you know, let's get detailed into what problem we're solving. On paper, it sounds a lot better. I just have to figure out a way to combine and weave the two in together, I think. But I'm all in my head about it, is why I bring it up, because I just can't stop thinking about it. You know, I'm like, have I had cringeworthy moments and not realized it? And the answer is yes. Although I will say, in my defense, I think the answer is yes for pretty much everybody. And of course, that's my wife calling. So that means time to wrap it up. And let's get to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. The great entrepreneur, Adam Bearton. Okay, first and foremost, we are rolling, and I just want to tell you I have to do something I should have done a long time ago.
Okay.
I have to go into my phone. I have to type in Adam Bearton. Did I say it right?
Bearton, like a ton of beer, yeah.
And I have to change it from Adam Pumpkin Carver
okay. To
Adam Chicken Out.
Yes. It's still a hybrid, but yes.
It's still
it's a hyphened career name, yeah.
Yes. Okay, there it is. It's done. Adam right. Chicken out in my phone officially. It's been in there as Pumpkin Man forever.
Yeah.
It's the first time I ever talked to you was on Wheeze, and it was about you were on the show, the reality show, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Halloween Wars, way back when.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to get to it. We're going to talk about it. But I also want to apologize for my weird purple shirt today.
No, I quite like it.
Is it a little snazzy?
I don't know
snazzy?
Where you're going after this, but no, okay. Somewhere fancy.
Can I tell you where I'm going,
yes,
actually?
Please. Yeah.
So I'm going to see Governor Hochul speak.
Okay.
But the reason that I'm going, I was invited because, and I don't even know if I'm actually allowed to say this, but I don't see why not, is that we were reached out to last week by the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
And apparently she had identified, her people had identified a handful of places as potential where she was going to speak, and we were actually in the running.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
This location?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was kind of surprised, too. I was like, what? But, you know, small business, rah, rah, you know. I mean, she would speak on whatever she would speak about, and then at some point, I'm sure she would turn to the small business owners and go, just like these folks right here,
right.
running a hard business in burgeon New York,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But we didn't get it, obviously. So then I got invited to where she's going, which I think is at one of the high schools in the city.
Okay.
I feel like I had to dress.
Well, you look great.
No,
hair's on point. Yeah, you look great.
Thank you.
Maybe you should do video.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And then the last thing before we actually get to you is you're shooting some video today.
I am, yeah.
Which is great. I am the only podcaster left, I think, who doesn't do any video. It's a terrible idea. Everyone does video.
Yeah.
You should do video.
You got to keep up with the times here.
But you're handsome. I'm not, you know, and also, like, look, I'm in this stupid little conference room. Like,
sure. We could turn this around. A couple lights and a backdrop. You're all set.
But you're such an expert at that. Like
I don't know about that.
Well, just the assets you put together, like the stuff I see on Instagram and stuff.
Yeah.
That's all you doing all that?
Yeah. I mean, everything Chicken Out is still me. I've had some people, you know, I've tried to bring them in to help me manage social media. But as far as content creation, I have a videographer that I'm working with, and he helped me through a lot of this season's pumpkin work. So, like, if you've seen the difference between my reels last year on pumpkin and this year, they're completely different, and that's a lot due to him. So I've upgraded my lighting, my cameras, and all that, but he's been helping me edit. So, but it's 90% me.
It's a skill set that you have, though. You have this. You're able to shoot and edit video and make it look really good.
Yeah, I mean,
beautiful.
I don't consider myself a pro, but you know, I grew up in a studio. My father was a photographer for Wegmans for many years.
Mm.
So I should be better with a real camera. All my stuff is pretty much iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
But like aperture and f-stop and all that stuff is still.
Are those apps or something?
That's just how you control an actual camera.
Oh,
you know,
okay,
like
okay.
What makes a good video and what doesn't, or a picture. So
your father worked for Wegmans Corporate?
Yeah, he was the food photographer for, I don't know, 20 plus years.
So talking about like the menu magazine, that kind of stuff, he would.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything at one point. And this is, you know, I'm going back before we were digital. So like he was shooting film and like Photoshop was coming around. Like this is years and years ago. But I'm pretty sure some of his images are still around. So like, you know, the Wegmans trucks, like the bananas, he always used to bitch because the guy over photoshopped them or whatever, but like it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that, like, you know,
that's
you go
so
in and
cool.
A box of cereal is still his image, you know.
You know, so. You always hear that about like construction folks or contractors, that as you drive around town, they'll point at houses and they'll go, "Hey, see that chimney over there?
Right.
Hey, look at that porch, you know."
Yeah.
So your father did that with the Wegmans trucks, and
yeah.
I took that picture right there.
Yeah. So I'm still proud, you know, but he would always bitch about the bananas. So there's one image on the Wegmans truck that's like super bright, and he bitched because the guy over photoshopped.
That's funny. Yeah. So where did you actually grow up?
I grew up here in the city of Rochester, New York. I grew up in the 19th Ward, and then we moved to Culver Road in between East and University.
So which high school for you?
So I went to School of the Arts.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I was in Catholic school primarily. I didn't get into McQuaid. That's where all my buddies went. Probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Didn't get in? Was it a grades thing or what happened?
Yeah, you know, academically challenged still.
Oh, really? I didn't know that they deny people at McQuaid. I figure if you could pay the tuition.
Yeah, maybe that was it, but I think you had to test to get in there at
the
time.
Sure, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I auditioned to get into School of the Arts at the time.
Really?
As a visual artist, I had to present a portfolio of my work.
So let's go back even further than high school then.
Yeah.
So at some point when you're a kid, obviously somebody, I'm assuming your parents, recognize that you have this artistic talent, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, both my parents were entrepreneurs and both of them were in the arts industry. So my dad was a photographer. My mother is a hairdresser still to this day. So
what's her studio? Let's give her a shout out.
She's been jumping around. She's been on Park Ave forever. but I don't know where she is right now.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, so. Wait, so you grew up around entrepreneurship, so there's a lot to unpack here. So let me start with that.
Okay.
I love talking to the child of entrepreneurs because generally speaking, the life of an entrepreneur, as you and I were talking about before the microphones even went on, can be a little bit of a roller coaster. Things are good, things are bad.
Yep.
Did you see that from them when you were a kid? Did they bring any of that home?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, from a financial point of view, I never really felt the stress. Both of them were fairly successful in their careers, but yeah, I could definitely feel that ebb and flow, but I feel it a hell of a lot more now that I'm in it, you know,
of
and
course,
doing it
yeah.
for sure. But, you know, I was always a creative, always an artist, still am to this day. And, you know, trying to translate that into business. So like, I know more about business now than I ever have, but it's, you know, it's this like long learning curve of like just doing it the hard way.
So what do you remember then about being a kid and first being recognized for that you had artistic talent? Somebody, whether it was a teacher, your parents, whoever, saying, Adam, this is really good. You're really good at this.
I mean, I remember probably as far back as like kindergarten getting complimented on my scissor work. Cause I'm just so detail oriented.
Yeah.
So that's like when it started, and I built a snowman and got on one of the news channels when I was like 6 or 7. And I've always just been, you know,
that's so cool.
Outgoing and creative. Yeah. Yeah.
What is it about your brain you think that works? Like, what is it about the creative brain that makes you, even as a kindergartner? And I have a unique perspective right now because I have a first grader. What made you take your time cutting things out as opposed to my son who will just plow through as fast as he can?
Yeah. Like,
is it a perfectionist thing? Like, where is it coming from in there?
Well, the perfectionist side of things is definitely a double-edged sword. So like I strive for perfection in everything I do and then end up not being happy with anything I do. And my wife, you know, makes fun of me all the time for that. Yeah. But I have 3 children, all, you know, under the age of 10. And it's wild, you know, you have your first kid and then you think you're gonna have a second kid and they're just a kid, you know, but like they're wildly different personalities. Mm-hmm. So my first daughter is, you know, cut from the same cloth. She's a creative. My middle son is a little bit more of a meathead. He's just like would plow through stuff. And then my third crew, he's just a builder and also artistic and creative, but like super detail oriented. So I don't know like where it comes from or the brain. Like I definitely am ADHD, but I think that is looked at more of as a superpower now than it is as a learning disability.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. So tell me about then you auditioned for School of the Arts. Was that a big deal? Were you nervous for that? Do you remember that?
Oh, I was wildly nervous because I was still in the Catholic school system. And because I didn't get into McQuaid, I went to Bishop Kearney for my freshman year. And I was trying to do art there, but there was no creative outlet. And one of my friends was going to School of the Arts and helped me get in and get the audition, but I was nervous. And
what do you do for an audition?
So as a visual artist, I had to present a portfolio of my work.
Cool.
So I had a, you know, portfolio of sketches, and they want to see certain stuff like figures. And so I skipped the freshman year in art school, which was like color theory. And, you know, still I'm probably, my daughter knows more about color theory than I do.
So what is, I know you, since you went to School of the Arts, you didn't have the high school experience, like of a regular, I don't know if regular school is the right word, but you know what I'm trying to say. But
yeah.
To your knowledge, like what's the difference in curriculum at School of the Arts? You're still taking some of those basic classes, right?
Sure.
But you just have more time allotted for art, or like how does the curriculum work there?
So I mean, it was definitely, yeah, you still have your basic stuff, the math, the science, the history and all that, but I instead of like traditional history, it was hybrid with art history, and then we would have like 2-hour blocks every day dedicated to art, whatever medium that we were.
That's
in
beautiful. Isn't that great that exists?
Oh my god, I mean, it was literally a game changer for me.
Yeah.
as you know, made me the person that I am today. Like without that outlet, I wouldn't be able to work with the mediums that I have, you know? So like plaster and metal and glass and all of those things wouldn't have been available to me in the traditional school system.
That is so great to hear. So let's say I come to you on graduation day, high school graduation. I say, Adam, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I wouldn't have known. Maybe I still don't know.
I kind of feel that way too, actually. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a common thing. You're like, you know, you're shooting the shit with people and it's like, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, where do I start? You know, I own a fried chicken restaurant and I carve pumpkins professionally. So it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but you're so good in any social situation. Like you will always have something to talk about. Like
it definitely is a conversation starter. Cause like, I just like, you know, just lay it out. And then people are like, wait a second. What did you just say? Professional pumpkin carver?
right. So did you go to college then or what?
I didn't. So okay. I chose to apprentice with local artists here in Rochester, New York. So I worked for Elizabeth Lyons. I blew glass for a few years. And then I transitioned to a completely different medium and worked for Paul Nablo, who's a famous metal sculpturist here. So
apprentices are all paid positions, right? So this is what you're doing for a living.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, out of high school, those were a couple of my first jobs. Yeah. And instead of going straight to college, I decided to travel and went and toured Europe for several weeks.
That is so cool. You are you're just a cool dude.
Well, thanks, like, dude.
I mean, think about this story. You went to an art high school. You had hours of the day every day. After high school, you skipped college. And go to be an apprentice with artists, right. And then at one point you're just like, I'm gonna go to Europe for a little bit. Like, you are a movie. They make movies about people like you. That is so freaking cool.
Maybe one day.
so what, tell me about the Europe trip real quick.
So it was me, my brother, and one of our best friends at the time. We decided to, so my father's from England, so I still have family over there, and that it was always like a starting point for us. So we flew into England, spent a week or two there, and then decided to bounce around Europe. So we did Spain and France, and we went to Prague. Prague was crazy far. It was the furthest I felt away from home.
Yeah.
You know, because I was 18, 19 at the time. But I had a buddy out there who was going to school, and I forget the freaking... Anyway, it was a wild experience.
Yeah, mostly fun, educational at all, or just fun?
No, mostly fun, but, you know, as far as education goes, like, I think that, you know, the education system the way that it is today versus, like, oh, you go to college and you study versus you go to Europe and just, like, learn how to survive. I think two are completely different assets, but... you know, the one that I chose was invaluable to, you know, who I am today.
Oh, so. Incredible, bro. Yeah. Incredible. Okay, so eventually you come back, and is it art the whole time? Do you ever hold a regular job at any point, or what happens next?
So in high school, as I was at School of the Arts, I got into the restaurant industry. So I was in food and hospitality, and my first gig was at Restaurant Tuvine, which I'm sure you remember.
Of course,
With the Jerry's. And that's where I fell in love with food and hospitality. And after high school, you know, stayed in that industry. So, like, moved up from a busboy to a food runner to a server to a bartender, and was tending bar and worked at all the top restaurants in Rochester. And
so I wouldn't be surprised if I came across you at some point without realizing it, because I used to frequent Tuvine back in the day. And fun fact, I just saw Jerry Serafine a couple weeks ago.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
How is it? Because I saw Verassi not too long ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. He was good. He was good. He did tell me, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, actually. It's been a
There's
long
so
time.
Much you're not allowed to say.
I this might get in.
I'm the interesting guy. You're the.
You tell me if this is too far, if this is too far. But you remember the chicken cutlets at Tuvine?
Yep.
They were, like, famous. Everyone loved the chicken cutlets. Yep. He told me that the secret to the chicken cutlets was starting in a cold pan. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
Absolutely not.
No, I mean, that again, was not
I,
true?
I don't think I really worked the line there, because I jumped between front of house, back of house. But I don't, that doesn't make any sense.
He may have been, you know what he might have been doing? Throwing me off.
Throwing you off, yeah.
I'm asking him for secrets, cold and he's pan. Like, he's going, I'm going to give this guy the worst tip ever.
That's actually the secret to our fried chicken. We start it in cold oil.
That's great. Yeah. You heard it here first. Try it at home. All right. Okay. So you're working your way through the restaurants and stuff. When do you get your hands on a pumpkin and go, I've got an idea?
Oh, man, it's like all muddled up, but, like, you know, so I traveled to Europe, I was working in the restaurant industry. I think it was high school where I've always loved Halloween, and pumpkin carving was always something that was like a seasonal thing. You got, like, you know, you got one shot at it. My father would always find the ugliest, most deformed pumpkins and carve it upside down. And, like, I was over here trying to, you know, create the perfect jack-o'-lantern. So his creativity kind of spawned what I do today in a lot of ways. But when I was in art school, I saw some of this sculptural pumpkin stuff online, and I took some of these ceramic tools home from my art class, and I spent an entire day on one pumpkin, and I kind of fell in love. There was, like, this challenge behind it that, you know, nobody was doing it, and, you know, who's stupid enough to spend 12 hours on a single carving of a piece of fruit that's just going to rot in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that is still true to this day. but that's when it started. And then I got hooked, but it was still kind of like a one or twice a year kind of thing. So I would do one huge, you know, really detailed sculpt every single year. And that was kind of during that time, I was in the restaurant industry. I was tending bar at a nightclub called One on Ryan Alley.
We definitely came across each other.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we've known each other for eons.
You're talking about all my old joints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I met my wife at One on opening night.
Oh, awesome.
And then soon after that, kind of got out of the restaurant industry, started my own construction company, but more like creative fabrication company. And then we ended up moving to New York. So I moved to New York with my wife and ended up getting hooked up with the Maniac Pumpkin Carvers, which is a team down in New York City.
Was that the goal, moving down there?
I've always loved New York. I feel like, you know, it's just part of me. Always wanted to live there. My wife got a job opportunity in Manhattan, and I said, screw it, let's go.
Yeah. It is magical. There's just an energy
to
walking
energy
around Manhattan, getting on the subway, going around. Like, there's just an energy to it that I've never recreated that energy in any other city.
Nope.
Period. Including, seriously, I've had the chance to go to Europe and Asia.
Yep.
And I've had great visits other places.
For sure.
But the energy of New York City is just different.
Can't beat it.
Mm-mm.
So I was super, super pumped to be down there, be a part of it. And I don't know if you remember, we're still going back, and I don't want to confuse things, but so through my construction creative fabrication business, I got commissioned to create a tap handle for Movember, which is a men's health movement.
Yeah.
And it was a tap handle with a mustache. So I had these mustaches laser jet cut out, and I'm building in the studio, and my brother was over, he brought a six pack, and one of these mustaches opened up a beer, like the curve of the mustache. So I went all in on this idea.
Cool, yeah.
So I created the mustache bottle opener. That was my first product-based business. And I grew out my mustache.
You still have a very nice mustache to this day, sir.
This is a toned-down version of what I was wearing years ago. But so I found out that there are facial hair competitions. And in New York City, I joined one of the teams, and I grew out my mustache, and I would take my product to these competitions to sell the product, and ended up growing out my mustache, and, you know, I ranked third in the country and held the title in New York City for 3 years.
That's amazing. Dude, so. You've such a great story. My God. So you've got this artistic mom and dad,
yep,
but now you're married. What does your wife do?
So my wife is the yin to my yang. She went to college, has her master's, is in corporate America.
Got it. So somebody to bring some sanity to the artists.
Yeah. But she's been, incredibly supportive of my wild entrepreneurial venture. So,
oh,
like,
God. I'm in awe. It's just such a great, and I love just your parents. Like, I mean, your house growing up, I just think it must have been the coolest, greatest environment, that just creativity was just embraced over and over. And tried to do that for our kids, but I feel like you guys are the gold standard of just embracing the creativity. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
So the pumpkin thing, though, you end up on this reality show at some point, and that was how I first, the beginning of this podcast where I'm changing the name, because we booked you to come on the Weeze show at one point.
Right.
And so what was that? You got on TV for it?
Yeah. So by moving to New York City, I got hooked up with the Maniac Pumpkin Carvers. Mm-hmm. The owners, Mark and Chris, had been on a show called Halloween Wars previously. And it was my first or second year working for them. And they were like, Food Network called, do you have any interest in going on the show? And I was like, screw it. Yeah. So I auditioned, got selected. And that show specifically is a combination of cake, candy, and pumpkin. So I was teamed up with two other food artists. And anyway, flew out to California, filmed the show, and ended up winning season 5 of Halloween Wars. So
everything you touch is gold.
Yeah.
You film it, and I always find this interesting about television.
Yeah.
You film it, and then you got to sit on that information for a while, right?
Yeah. It was almost a year.
A year?
Yeah.
So for a year, I don't know if the statute of limitations is up. I'm so curious. In that year where you are clearly under contract, you can't tell anybody.
Right.
Who do you tell? I mean, wife is exempt. You get to tell the wife, for sure.
I don't know who I told. I remember texting Mark and Evan and telling them that I quote unquote didn't lose, because I didn't tell them that I won.
Yeah.
But
a little loophole on the contract.
Yeah, I don't know. So because they were so influential to like who I am today in the pumpkin scene, like they really got me started. They got me on the show. So kudos to those boys for sure. But
Mom and dad?
Mom and dad was already gone at that point, but told mom, maybe my brothers and sisters, but
but everyone was swore to secrecy.
So, swore to secrecy. I mean, dude, a year. So we filmed in December in California because pumpkins are still good out there, I guess. And I had to wait until the following October for it to air. And then, yeah, it was brutal to hold that in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But the only good thing about that is, though, you could be so prepared for when it hit TV that you could be ready to embrace everything that was going to come with it because you knew what was about to happen.
Well, I thought it was really going to put me on the map. You know, I was like, I won the show. I was on Food Network and national broadcast. Like, I thought my life was going to change. And then it aired. And I had a party and it was fun. And I thought I was in New York City. I was going to get picked up. Like, I'm talking nothing. You know, there's one kid in the grocery store who recognized me. And I was like, but it didn't solidify my TV career. That's for sure.
Okay. All right. So all this whole story so far, the one thing we haven't really talked about is fried chicken.
Right.
So at any point up until this point where we are in the story, are you frying chicken anywhere at home? I mean, you worked in these restaurants, so you're doing some fried chicken, but is it in your head yet? Has the idea of Chicken Out, has that light bulb gone off yet?
So as a creative, the name Chicken Out has already been in my head. So I didn't at that time buy the domain, but I always thought Chicken Out was a good name for a fried chicken restaurant. But that was it up to this point. Me moving to New York City is a lot of the reason that I'm in the fried chicken business. So Nashville chicken was kind of trending at the time, and I had a fried chicken spot right next to my house called Peach's Hot House. It was a like tiny little joint, unbelievable fried chicken, Nashville flair, so spicy. And I got used to eating this great fried chicken in New York City. We had our first two kids, decided to move back to Rochester. And as I was looking for houses up here, I'm like, there's nobody frying chicken. It was just KFC and Popeyes, which I thought there was a hole in the market. You know, nobody was dedicating their menu to fried chicken in Southern Side. So I went on this quest to, you know, try to come up with a recipe. And it's also kind of tied into my roots. So my grandmother was from the South and she married an Italian. So, you know, Sunday dinners were big and it was either sauce or fried chicken. And that fried chicken that I grew up eating, and I saw a hole in the market, and I was like, I gotta do something. So I had the name already, and wrote a business plan, and decided to.
And then you did.
Yeah.
One of the coolest things anyone has ever done. If I'm getting the story correct,
okay.
Legend has it, you said, if I'm gonna run a restaurant, I need to learn how to run a restaurant. I mean, you had already been working in restaurants.
Sure.
Is it true that you got a job at Popeyes?
Yes.
It is true.
It is true.
That is one of the coolest things that I've ever heard any entrepreneur say. You went, now some people did it just because they needed to make ends meet. You know, I mean, I worked at Red Lobster when I was a kid. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
But you literally said, I need to go learn how to do this. I'm going to go. There's only one other person I know who did this.
Yeah.
And his name was Forrest Mars.
Okay.
His father was technically the founder, but he was the president of Mars, as in like Snickers bars.
Oh, no shit.
He went to Europe and got a job at Nestle to work on the line to learn how to mass produce chocolate.
Right.
You are the second person I've ever heard who said, I'm going to go work for the big guys to learn how to do this. I think it is the absolute best life hack in history. Because if you go to Popeye's corporate and go, hey, could you teach me everything I need to know about running a fried chicken restaurant? They say, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you could just apply for the job.
I just got I felt like Batman. I went in there undercover and got a job on the line. And at that point, I'd already been experimenting with the fried chicken recipe. So like, I know how to fry a bird at home, and my wife is getting squirrely because it stinks up the house and all that. How do you fry 2,000 birds and keep them all the same? So that interested me. Like, how does one high school kid fry the exact same piece of chicken in Rochester as he does in Georgia? Because it's a national chain, right? So like, there has to be some consistency there. And that's what I was obsessed with before I launched Chicken Out. And I worked at Popeyes for 8 weeks.
What would you say? Is it really just SOPs, standard operating procedures? Things are uniform? I mean, what would you say you really figured out during that time?
I mean, there was a couple of crucial pieces of equipment, like our breading station, like how I hold my protein and how we bread and sift our flour. Mm. So, you know, when my grandmother would cook fried chicken, she would season the flour. And I think a lot of people would do that, you know, in small batches. But when you're producing, you know, you're going through hundreds of pounds of flour, a lot of that seasoning is just going to end up in the trash. So I tried to get this hybrid of like, how do I take the Nashville flair and not have to season my flour. So we don't season the flour, but we brine our chicken for 24 hours. We rack it so it's marinating, hand bread it, and then fry it and then season it to order. So all the protein that comes out of the fryer is seasoned So all that seasoning kind of like soaks down into the breading.
Now, what, just real quick before we move on from Popeyes, for those 8 weeks that you're working there, I'm just remembering back to this Forrest Mars story.
Okay.
Because there's a great podcast called Acquired that it's like a 4-hour long story of Forrest Mars. And when he worked at, and he was notorious for being an absolute nightmare to work for and around, because he was a guy who would punch a hole in the conference room wall if he didn't like what he was getting, slamming doors. Okay. He's making everybody clock in, including himself, which, by the way, we do here. We all clock in, including me.
Okay.
But and I stole that from him, that idea.
Good.
Everyone clocks in, including me. But anyway, but he was just kind of a like, you know, you don't grow a $1 billion business without being, for lack of a better term, kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But later in life, somebody wrote a book about Forrest Mars and went and found this person from Nestle that he worked under, and they said he was great. He worked there for a year, and they were like, he was great. He never gave us any lip.
Yeah.
Because he was just undercover.
Right.
Like, do you, in those 8 weeks, there had to be times where you were aware of the fact that, like, this isn't, I don't want to use the word beneath me, because that's not what I'm trying to say. Because nothing, I believe there's pride in every job.
For sure.
But I'm going for that general type of sentiment where, you know, this isn't your career. You're not a career Popeyes person.
Right.
And then some, like, you know, manager is coming over and being like, Adam, your break, you can't take your break until 12:30. And you're just like, did you just ever have to bite your tongue? Or were you like, I'm here for 8 weeks, I don't care what they said?
No,
whatever.
I mean, I went in there with a very specific goal, and it was to try to get as much information as I could on frying chicken and volume. My wife, when I got the job at the time, my wife was like, you know, what about your art? What are you doing with your career? Like, she thought I was kind of like giving up on life, but it was a very strategic plan.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to be there more than a couple months. And
did your kids ever say, my dad works at Popeyes? And you're like, hold on.
No, they were all too young. Like, I mean, we're talking, I was still in diapers at that time, but yeah, I mean, I got paid to get my doctor in fried chicken.
Hell yeah, man. I just think it's the greatest. There's so many things about your story that are awesome.
Thanks.
Okay, so now, Chicken Out. Now, you've figured it out, and it's time to launch Chicken Out. So what is day one of Chicken Out like? What's the very first day that you sell chicken to the public?
So Drew and I and my brother Marcus Lanier owned the Blossom Road Pub, and they were allowing me to test fry in their kitchen on off hours. So I was using their kitchen and working at Popeyes and trying to figure it out. And we decided that we would do a pop-up, you know, because pop-ups were trending in New York City, but nobody was really doing them here. So they allowed me to take over their kitchen one night a week, and we decided on Thursday night, and that was the launch of Chicken Out. I decided the first Thursday.
Did you crush it? Because I remember those nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that it was, you know, hard. It was hard. You had long lines, long waits.
Yeah.
And I mean, you did so many brilliant things, like the golden egg, right? Like the pass to get to the front of the line. Just brilliant. But I'm just wondering how that very first night went. Were you gangbusters on the first night?
No, definitely not. So I'd started to try to build the hype on a social media page, because again, I had some marketing background through some other businesses that I've done, and knew Instagram was the way to kind of push this out. So first night was like more friends and family. And then from there, week two kind of grew, week three. And then it was like week four was a line out the door.
That was line out the door. Yeah. Okay. So 4 weeks. I mean, that's a hell of a rise. That's meteoric, right?
Yeah.
And you start doing these creative things like the one I just mentioned. Did I have it? Was it a golden egg or was
golden
it
golden egg? Yeah. I just brought it back. I just had a few these last couple of weeks. I'm trying to bring it back.
That's great.
Know? Yeah.
So you would go out to the public and you would film yourself or take a picture of yourself putting a golden egg somewhere.
Mm.
And back in those days, what that meant was you got to cut to the front of the line, right?
Right. So I would do a golden egg hunt. First person to find it would take a picture, tag us on social media again to kind of like build that momentum. And they would be able to come in, jump the line, and get a free meal on us.
It's
and
just brilliant.
Still something
it's
we do
so
today.
Brilliant that I once stole your idea.
Oh, I don't you know did? If you know I this. Didn't know that.
Which, if I'm being honest with you, I kind of also stole Willy Wonka's idea. Mine was a little closer to Willy Wonka than yours. But I did a pizza sauce one time. This is probably about 5 years ago, where I put a golden cap on one jar of pizza sauce and put that out into the world. And I took a video of myself right down here, putting that one jar in the middle of a case, in the middle of a pallet, and then wrapping the pallet and out onto a truck.
Yeah.
And I just said, whoever finds that jar. And it ended up getting found at one of the Wegmans in Webster.
Oh, really?
And the merchant, then they go up to, so the, this is what I didn't think through. They went up to the customer service to say, I found it.
Yeah.
I need my, and what you were winning was a year of sauce, which meant I'd give you a case of sauce every month for a year.
Okay.
And they went up to customer service, this part I didn't think through, to say, I found the golden jar. And of course, customer service goes, what?
Yeah.
We don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Because I hadn't really thought through the whole, like, oh no, this is us doing it, not Wegmans.
Right.
So that, of course, ends up to the merchant, who is basically my boss,
yeah.
the guy who can, and he's calling me going, what did you do? So it almost backfired on me a little bit, you know,
but really anyway, cool though.
It kind of worked though. Yeah. People were looking for it.
Just the one off, or have you done it again?
No, but you know what? Now I think you're motivating me to do it again. Actually, I think maybe we should do it again.
I think there's a new sauce going through the factory that we should play with. I mean, a golden cap on one of these new sauces sounds like a fun idea.
Are we allowed to talk about what you're doing here today?
I don't know. We're here. I'm in your building.
Like you said, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. That's my new line.
Yeah.
That should be the name of the podcast. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk. Anyway, are you willing to? Do you want to? I mean, by the time this comes out, this will either be out this Sunday or following Sunday. So it's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it, or do you want to move on?
I think we should talk about it.
Okay, great. What are you doing here today, Adam?
Are you ready for a podcast that's real and empowering?
Getting Real with Bossy brings bold, honest conversations with business owners who are building big dreams and doing it their way.
No fluff, just truth, energy, and inspiration.
Hit play and get lifted.
Do you feel like life is a lot lately? Yeah, same. I'm Emily Hesney Lynch, host of It's a Lot, a podcast about social media, parenthood, and beyond. We talk about the all-consuming, weird, and wonderful stuff that makes life a lot. Tune in for honest conversations with parents, social media experts, authors, content creators, and more. New episodes drop every other Tuesday. Check out It's a Lot wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
I'm here today for our first sauce production, which is mind-bending. Yes. I can't believe we're actually here.
I'm so excited about it. I mean, you have this brand. You've built such an exciting brand, and I'm so proud to be associated in a small, tiny way. I don't deserve to be associated. We're just a co-packer. This is why I say, can we talk about it?
Because yeah.
We don't have to. But I love that you're making your sauces here, and that they're going to be available to the public in more than just that Chicken Out. You know, they'll be able to find it retail stores.
Yeah.
Great. I hope. Will you let Redbird Market carry it? Can they carry it?
I would love everybody to carry it.
They would
I think to buy a case
of each.
I was talking to Jared downstairs, and it's like it's the chicken and the egg story. So like I need the bottle in order to get the placement, but you know, need the placement to sell the bottle. So
true.
From yeah, it is from a retail perspective, you know, I'm very interested. I would love to, you know, spread it wide and proud. You know?
I'll give you like a small list of just the local kind of mom and pops. That's your first step.
Yep.
Couple months of that under your belt. Let's take that thing to the supermarkets, baby.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait, man. Okay. These things are going to be sick.
Excellent. So we're doing what? Barbecue, awesome sauce.
Yep. Honey mustard and buffalo.
Love it.
Yep.
Fantastic.
And then maybe one day ranch, because anybody that knows anything, ranch is the bee's knees.
I was at the IFT show yesterday, which is the Institution of Food Technologists, basically food scientists.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who I talked to about like emulsifiers in ranch, basically how to make ranch in this way.
Okay.
So
interesting.
We're heading down the road, bro.
All right, cool.
We're heading down. Yeah. All right, speaking of heading down the road, back to your story.
Yeah.
So you're doing Thursday nights, you're blowing up, the door is out, the line is out the door. Out of curiosity, during that time, was there ever a problem where the owners of the bar, granted they're your friend and your brother, but are they ever coming to you going like, hey man, this is actually almost getting a little too out of hand? Or are they just happy people are coming in buying drinks?
Yeah, no, I think they were more than happy. It was crazy because I had met with another restaurateur and moved back from New York City and was like, I want to create this crazy viral thing and, you know, get lines out the door. And they were like, it's Rochester, New York. You're not going to get lines out the door, you know? And luckily, you know, indirectly, that's what happened. And that's what I wanted to happen, but it wasn't necessarily by design. So like, because I was started so small, I would just get a couple cases of chicken and make a, you know, a little sauce and then sell out. So that we would sell out so quick that it indirectly created this demand and this hype that people are like, oh shit, it's gotta be that good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But selling out's not always a bad thing.
No, if anything, you know, now the struggles that I deal with as, you know, almost a full-time brick and mortar location are more, you know, more stressful than what I was going through at the pop-up days. So like when I was doing the pop-up, even like through the pandemic, we were doing this pre-order pickup. We created those big boxes so you can get tender sides and sauce all in one big box. And I would do a pre-sale the day before for the following day. And I would open up the website at like 9 a.m. and we would sell out in minutes. And that was amazing because I knew exactly what was coming. How many pieces of chicken, what temperature, what sauce. So we would just make everything fresh and then sell it out. There was zero waste. Now it's like this, you know, full-time operation. It's cold out. you know, it's a slow day or a holiday. What, you know, you have to like navigate all these things.
I think what I've heard you say just there and then also before is, yeah, you had created this zero waste business model, which is just a dream come true.
Yeah.
I remember starting here pretty early on and one of my mentors saying to me, what are you accounting for on waste? And I was like, huh? What do you mean waste? Right. And it sounds like maybe you had almost a similar situation when you first started the brick and mortar of being like, I have to control waste.
Yeah, waste log. Like, yeah. I mean, that is something that we just started doing because it's been a part of it. But like tracking that waste and trying to minimize it is a big part of it because, you know, in the restaurant industry, food industry, you know, margins are razor thin. So, you know, you're dealing with, you know, every penny counts, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. Pennies make dollars, as they say.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're doing the Thursday night thing, and inevitably, pretty early on, there's enough demand that I have to imagine people are coming at you left and right saying, hey, Adam, when are you going to open a brick and mortar?
Right.
And was your reaction always, yes, I'm going to do that? Or did you actually kind of hold that off for a while?
Well, I knew that I wanted to slow roll it and learn because, again, I've worked in the restaurant industry, but I've never, you know, working as a bartender or a server versus owning a restaurant are completely different. So, like, reading my brother's, you know, end of the night reports and things like that and, like, understanding sales tax and all of those things that I didn't know. But I really wanted that was always the dream. I moved back, do a pop-up to build the following and, you know, do it in a way that didn't have big capital overhead and, you know, I wasn't, like, rolling the dice necessarily, but I always wanted to invest into downtown Rochester and create our first flagship location, which took a hell of a lot longer than I wanted it to, but we finally achieved that goal.
Yeah. So yeah. What was that like? I mean, that's a hell of a leap, right?
Yeah.
I do want to say one more thing about the pop-up days. I remember one year at Rock Holiday Village that you were at Rock Holiday Village and you had a line to the street. Yeah. And I just remember being like, this guy has the freaking, what do you call it, tiger by the tail.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, how exciting that was, but
it was a great time. But again, you know, I'm only here because of the support from the Rochester community. Definitely, so again,
You know. Okay, so you sign your name on a lease and you got to move into a building. And I mean, at this point, you really, because up until then, not that you're never scared, but this is the moment now, maybe a little of that fear starts to creep in.
Oh, yeah. So it was a longer run than I wanted it to be because we hit all of our milestones at the Blossom Road Pub. But what happened is the health department came in and shut us down at the Blossom because you can't have two entities working in one kitchen because of food safety, right? And I didn't know that. And they, anyway, we got a new inspector.
I didn't know that either. I thought they had like ghost kitchens all over the place.
I don't know what it is now, but I know Monroe County hasn't been very favorable to that, meaning Chicken Out and Blossom Road Pub producing food in the same kitchen.
Got it.
Without two separate health permits. Anyway.
Okay, got it.
So we ended up moving down the road to University Avenue, and I subleased a place in the old Joe Bean cafe building. Mm-hmm. And I was going to sign a lease there. I was like literally about to sign on the dotted line, and then COVID hit. So I walked away from that lease and got stuck in this pop-up model for a couple of years. But again, because I was a pop-up, I was actually able to scale through that time. A lot of restaurants were getting crushed because of overhead and staffing and social distancing, and I was able to move around and work with some of the coolest restaurants in Rochester during those few years. That led me to one of those locations being the East End Tavern, which is our location to this day. I moved into that location and actually signed, like all these deals I did, I never really signed a lease. It was just a handshake deal, a couple months, we were in and out. But I would always have to restart the business, new kitchen, new setup, new location, train the customer. So I signed a year lease at East End Tavern with no intention of staying in that location, but for me to like be able to scout other locations in Rochester to eventually buy a building and invest into that space. Long story short, East End Tavern decides to close up and I had an opportunity to take over that building, which I did, and that's when the nerves kicked in. So I purchased that building from the previous owner, and that was a huge move for me.
You own the building?
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah, because again, I wanted to invest in my community in Rochester and being a real estate owner. And you know, the other thing too, like I'm doing interior design, I'm a creative, I'm an artist, I'm a builder. This Chicken Out was a way for me to take my marketing, my artistic, my food and hospitality and cram it into one model. So the build out, the interior design and the marketing, they're all part of this venture, you know? So like me purchasing that building allowed me to design my first commercial space, and that was exciting.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, so taking it into real time now, as we speak today, what are this is one of the questions I love asking entrepreneurs. What are two things you would say just today, now, that are going great, and then one thing keeping you up at night?
I think there's a lot of things keeping me up at night. I think the nonstop stress of the restaurant industry, like, there's so many moving parts. You know, we're dealing with time sensitive products, you know, chicken and sauce, everything is made in house, it's fresh. I think staffing, creating culture within a team, you know, because like when I was a pop-up, it was me, and of course I had great people helping me out. My brother was one of them. But I was able to cook and do the marketing and do the books. I was doing everything. Now it's bigger than me, right? So I've had to create a team underneath me and a management structure and, you know, SOPs. Like SOPs wasn't a part of my vocabulary a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So now these processes and procedures. So like that's where I'm at. I mean, you know, our burn rate at the restaurant is crazy. You know, like I started this little baby bird with $1,500 and thought that was a big investment, you know, and now like the amount of money coming in and out of the door is stupid.
Well, so every time I say that, my partner always goes, "More money, more problems though, huh,
that's
buddy?"
Right.
Yeah, it's true.
And you know, like it's sparkly on the outside, but like I am still investing in the, you know, every penny we make just gets invested back into growth, you
right
know?
So right, so a couple things there. So one is, you talked about something that we do talk about on here, which is the stages of entrepreneurship, and that first stage, which is called muscling the business. You're doing everything, and you're far into stage two, which is SOPs and people now. You literally can't do everything. It's physically impossible, so now you have to. And so that's, it's incredible to just see that growth. And don't you think though about that, and I have found this myself, that it's an interesting thing, because on day one of starting a business, your job is to work your ass off.
Right.
Okay. But now your job is to be a leader. And that skill set of being a leader was not required on day one.
Correct.
On day 1000, finally, now somebody goes, "Oh, and by the way, you have to be a great leader."
Yeah.
And you go, "I do? Now I have to figure this out?"
Right.
And I struggle with it every day. I have moments where I go, "Wow, I think I was a great leader in that situation." And I have moments where I go, "I think I shit the bed as a leader in that situation."
For sure.
How have you found being a leader?
Definitely, again, a learning curve, you know. I've always, you know, maybe considered myself a good leader, you know, leading my team in Halloween Wars, you know, like I like leading a team. Versus the idea of doing it versus actually doing it, I think are two different things. So like I've definitely struggled there. And I think you put it perfectly. It's like, you know, sometimes you hit the nail on the head and sometimes you swing and you miss. Mm-hmm. But again, I think, you know, in any business, but creating a culture versus just having employees and a team, I think are two different things. So like, there's been an ebb and flow of that culture, you know, the chicken out culture in the building versus the customer side, again, are two different things, but we're getting back to where we want to be. And I think that is what stresses me out the most, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I care about people so much. So it's not like, "Hey, let's create chicken out so Adam can make a bunch of money." It was like, I want to feed my community, I want to give back, and I want to create a business where people can succeed. You know, I'd love my dishwasher to be a manager or own one day, you know, like I love that kind of idea.
That's great leadership. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And taking the time every once in a while, if the dishwasher shows entrepreneurial initiative, taking the time once in a while to show them what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think that's maybe what frustrates me the most. Like I've spent so much time with different people through the building, you know, like the turnover ratio is high in this industry. But like, again, actually my dishwasher is probably my longest employee. I picked him up at Dickie's Corner Pub. He's been with me almost 7 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Davey, love him.
Yeah, the turnover can be rough. I get it. Absolutely. So getting into the future, obviously, the sauces will be out very soon. But beyond the sauces, what else do you have in mind for the future as you look out 1-10 year plan? What are you thinking?
So one of the goals for 2026 is solidifying our first run of sauces, thanks to Craft Cannery. So
I love you so much.
Freaking so excited, dude. This has been a long time in the making. This will help us keep consistency and then ultimately entertain multiple locations. So The idea is to break ground on a second location this year.
Oh, fantastic. Sorry, you're looking around, I assume.
Yeah, I'm always snooping around. I got a couple turnkey options, but it's like strategically for number two, I want it to be close enough, but far enough away where we're not stealing business from our first location. So I got my eye on a few spaces, and then it's like, I'm probably going to move into a lease deal, right? So like now owning a property, you know, owning the property and understanding those financials versus like now I have to do a 10-year lease and I'm building out somebody else's space, completely different wheelhouse, you know? Yeah.
Do you, just to get into legal structure, does the entity that owns the building, is it separate from the entity that owns the restaurant?
Yeah, I did separate them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why, but also our accountant and lawyer made us do that too.
Yeah.
And apparently it's the right move.
Apparently. I was also guided into that move. And I think
you pay yourself rent basically. And,
right.
And you can move money around, which is good.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, the pie in the sky is to make this a national brand. And I think it's unfortunate that I beat myself up that it's taken me this long to get to where I am today. Again, I think it was a methodical kind of growth, but you know, you look at other fried chicken conglomerates that are just taking over, and that frustrates me.
Yeah.
I think I'm like, you know, like day one, you know, first year of Chicken Out, like could have, the right person walked into my life could have been a national brand by now. Seven years. 300 locations. And I haven't done that, and that pisses me off, but we'll see. We'll see what, you know, I actually met with a local franchisor, and he recommended that I get at least two or three under my belt before I franchise. Because I was going to go from one right into a franchise opportunity. Because I've had so many people have come into my life, like, what, you know, I want one here, I want one there. Like, let me know when you're going to franchise. But again, though, the SOPs, the processes, that handbook has to be created before I can let it go. I can't, every location can't be... You know.
Well, it sounds like you're right on the impetus, though. I mean, you're saying that you think by the end of 2026, you will have not only announced, but actually opened a second location. You think. I'm not holding you to it.
I think. I mean, again, it took me a year and a half to get the first location. Like, I got the building, we demoed it, and then I got stuck. I was waiting for my builder's permit, and then it just was a long process. Versus, like, I went to have a meeting at the Strath Allen, you know, a couple weeks ago. I walked in and it was completely demoed. They renovated their whole dining room and bar. And then they were on social media like, oh, we're going to be open for Valentine's Day. And I was like, the fuck you are. Like, there's no way. And then sure enough, they're open.
I know the secret to that.
You do? Okay.
The building is owned by Dave Krista.
Right.
And he owns the construction company.
Yeah.
So he, you know, when they, and so that's the.
So yeah, but it's being done. Like, I drove by another location. It was under construction 2 weeks ago and now it's open. It's a bank. I mean, it could be done quicker. Yeah. So like, again, you pay for that speed, right?
For sure.
What is the equation? You can have it. You can only have two: fast, good, or cheap. But you can't have all three.
Yeah.
So that's true. Anyway, if the stars align, I think that we could be, we could be open by the end of the year. Sure.
Yeah. Fantastic. Let's I can't thank you enough for coming in. You're here for other reasons, but letting me kidnap you for a little while and come up here. I mean, you have one of the best stories. I just think it's wonderful. Like, I just think that my favorite part of your story really just goes back to the childhood about your parents nurturing you as an artist.
Yeah.
And encouraging you to go to school of the arts. And then, you know, when you leave high school, the fact that you don't go to college, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That you were told, yes, go apprentice with artists. I mean, I came from a generation. How old are you? Can I ask?
I'll be 43 next week.
What day?
31st.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, I swear to God.
We have the exact same birthday.
Get out of here.
March 31st, 1983.
No way, dude.
What? Hold on. I'm getting out 83? My license. Dude, we are the exact same. I can't even believe it.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I want to prove it. Show my ID. 33183.
Look at that.
Get out of here, dude.
Tell me that's not fucking insane.
What? What are the chances?
I don't even know what to say.
Holy shit.
I'm speechless.
This is weird. I got goosebumps, man.
This is why the podcast should be video only, because I don't know what to say right now. You can't go silent on an audio only podcast.
Holy crap. That's incredible.
Well, first of all, happy birthday.
And to you.
So now I will put this out this Sunday. So it's going into our birthdays.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what are you doing for your birthday? 43 is a little boring. I'm getting is an ice cream cake.
Ice cream cake. Yeah. Mine will be similar. We'll go out. I might go bowling with the kids. We'll go to dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. That's incredible.
Oh, my God, dude.
I just love you even
this
more
This is crazy.
All right. Well, anyway, what was I going to say before I asked you how old you were?
I can't remember.
I was going somewhere, and I got completely thrown off.
I don't know. It was entrepreneurial spirit, and I didn't go to college.
Okay. Yes. That's where I was going with it, was that our generation, being that we're literally the same age. Wait a second. Hold on. What time? Do you know what time you were born? I do, actually.
I think it was 9:33, I think.
A.M. or P.M.?
I think it was P.M.
I'm older than you.
Are you?
Yeah. 11:18 A.M. Yeah. I'm your elder.
All right. Oh, this is hilarious.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that that our generation, I feel like at least my parents, you didn't have to experience this, but I think you're in the minority. Mm. My parents, it was go to college, get a job, work for a corporation, hold on to the security of working for a corporation, and cherish that paycheck.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship, I don't want to say it was shit on, but it wasn't taking, I would say, not that entrepreneurship was shit on, any risk whatsoever was shit on by my parents. And I love my parents. My parents did a great job in many, many ways, but there was little to no risk tolerance from my parents.
Sure. Italian family, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So my mother's side, my grandparents were more of that nature.
You know,
like, hey, you sure? Kind of, but also very supportive. They were not entrepreneurs, but you know, my parents had always nurtured that and never pushed back. I think there's two ways. Like, was it too loose? You know, like, could I have had more direction? Like, you should do these things, maybe. But I had a free and open life path, and stumbled into what I do today. I don't know. Was it good or was it bad? I think I learned more by traveling Europe than working for artists than I would have at a traditional college. I would have just fucking partied and, barely skated through, you know, academically speaking, you know. So, like, you know, I barely got through high school academically, but like succeeded in art for sure, because that's what I was good at. You know?
You're an example of what happens when you encourage, positive reinforce somebody, because yes, there are kids who in middle school maybe were doodling and some science teacher told them, stop doodling, pay attention.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, I don't want to talk too much, but like, I think the traditional school structure crushes children's dreams.
And
I'm struggling with it as a parent now. So like, if anything, I'm trying to create the same environment that I grew up in for my kids. Like, be great, you know, like my daughter was selling cookies at Chicken Out 2 weeks ago. My youngest, my 6-year-old, has a vending machine business in Chicken Out. So like, they're all already entrepreneurs.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But, you know, I think there's teachers out there who are squashing a kid who's doodling. And honestly, if you're a good teacher, maybe you see the kid is doodling. And if you recognize the doodles to be really good, yeah, I mean, listen, I get it. It's science class, but maybe you don't slap the wrist. And maybe you also whisper to the art teacher, like, hey, Adam is really good. I don't know if you've seen his stuff, you know.
Well, that's, I mean, I see it right now. And, you know, all three of my kids go to public school. And, you know, it's a beautiful school. But is it promoting the arts? Definitely not. You know, like our class is kind of just like squeezed in there somewhere versus it being a focus. And, you know, the whole starving artist thing is a real thing, you know, like, you know, I created Chicken Out as a vehicle to, you know, support myself and my family. But pumpkin carving is what I really love to do. And now I've turned that into a lucrative business.
Yeah, I remember I was trying to get you to speak at Rotary in October, and you were like, I am booked for all of October.
I did. You didn't show up. I showed up.
That's true. It's true. That's true. That's right. Well, now that I know we're kindred spirits, I'll be there every time.
Right.
I DoorDash Chicken Out with some frequency.
I
remember the very first time I ever did it was like two or four, right? Those are the options, 2 or 4. And I got like 4. Or is it, how many chicken tenders you get?
It's a 3-piece tender, but you can add one if you want.
3. Okay. Yeah. So I might have gotten like a family flock or something.
Yeah, because
I'm a big guy. So I was like, 3 chicken tenders, please.
Right.
3 chicken tenders.
Crush those things.
But then they're just gigantic.
They are, yeah. And a lot of people get 2 meals out of it. They'll be like, yeah, I get lunch, you know, after dinner. You know, that 3-piece. And we started with those monsters. Obviously, you know, the size of the tenders fluctuates, but it's a good old meal. So like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
I had way too much food that day. It came in a big box. It was embarrassing. Like when I order Chinese food and they throw in 3 sets of silverware.
comes in the liquor box. You know you overordered.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. That's right. All right, Adam. Well, anyway, first and foremost, happy 43rd birthday, my friend.
And to you, my
friend.
Thank you very much. Wow, this is great.
Thank you. And it was great to hear your story. Congratulations on everything. I just, you there's no stopping you. You know, you have a huge fan here. I'm excited. I just am so glad to be just a tiny, 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 minuscule little part of it with what we're doing here today. And I can't wait to see more success.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very much looking to the future, and Craft Cannery is going to be a big part of that. So
thank you, brother. Thanks, thank you. All right, let's go check on the sauce. Let's
all right.
Go
do it.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.